When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 16. Hello everyone and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal, Season 16, Episode 2. And thank you to everyone who reached out following last week's debut episode of the season, 25 Years of Darkness. And something tells me that won't be the last we hear from Wren. But today, we have something slightly different, a topic that we probably haven't covered in depth on any other episode. However, it's a topic that I have a personal story, which I think I've told before, which I'll just remind you of at the end. Because this seems to be a phenomena that does occur around the world. And that is the idea of haunted land. Now, you may well think, well, we've heard of haunted land before, but I mean specifically haunted land with a tainted history where houses are then built on top of. And I'm not necessarily talking graveyards or the usual tropes. But as ever within the world of the paranormal, one question often fractures out into a million others. So, for example, if you build a house, as in this situation, on land which is tainted with misery and anguish? Is it the collective energies of that misery and anguish that are embedded in the ground that are somehow manifesting these spirits or these paranormal occurrences to take place? By that I mean, is it one paranormal battery that is just powering phenomena in everyone's house in the area? Or is it a battery of sorts that just makes it easier for individual sentient beings to come through? Now, they, of course, are just theories, but what you're about to listen to is Michelle's experience. Now, when you listen to this, maybe make up your own theory, or at least dwell on it a while and think why this might take place. Because I can provide theories until the cows come home, but in truth, no one is an expert in a field as intangible as the paranormal. So, in reality, it's down to each individual listener and their belief system to create a reason why these things are happening. And believe me, I want to share Michelle's experience as quickly as possible. So I'm going to very quickly say thank you to our newest members over at Patreon. When you join our wonderful Patreon team, not only will you receive each and every release on this feed, both early and ad-free, but you can also gain exclusive access to our Patreon-only podcast, Dark Bites. And Dark Bites runs each and every week of the year, even on the downtime between seasons. Which means not only do you not miss a paranormal fix each week, but you also gain access to well over 60 hours worth of Patreon-only paranormal experiences. Literally, on the last episode of Dark Bites, I confessed it's my favourite show that I produce. And the reason is, we cover so many aspects and different experiences within the one episode, it leaves a lot of room for conversation, for debate amongst our wonderful team over at Patreon. And even after 40 years of reading everything I can on the subject, each week Dark Bites never fails to produce something I've never heard of before. But genuinely, the best thing about our Patreon is our community. There are many, many paranormal communities out there. Believe me, I've joined them all. And I can honestly say, hand on heart, we have the best paranormal community out there. Everything from debunkers to non-believers to pure believers. But the one thing we do have is respect for each other. It genuinely is a wonderful environment for people who are like-minded paranormal enthusiasts. And we'd love to extend an exclusive invitation just for you. Simply head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. And for less than the price of a cup of coffee a month, you can join a community that you feel proud to be part of. So without further ado, a huge thank you to our latest team members over on Patreon. And they are Charlotte Cox, Norcal Lover, Melissa F. Days, Lynn Bennett, Beck Stone, Tina Richardson, Nare, Barbara Murphy, Hey That's Karma, Jade McDonald, Tony Janutolo, Sophia, Frina Hussey, Kelly Johnson, Austin, Tonica Price, Jut Jut, Rena Williamson, Leanne, Adam Anderson, Michael Prifty, Brittany Taylor, Christina D, Nevin Phillips, Tom Thornton, Page Master, Sally McGregor, Elizabeth Ashley, Maria C, Gigi Guise, Magali Marin C, Ashley Shivar, Alexandria McCauley, Alan Henman, Persephone Thrasher, and Chanel Scott. Thank you so much for supporting the show, guys. It genuinely means the world and allows the show to keep going. So if this sounds like your cup of tea, so to speak, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. And if you have signed up and you haven't heard your name yet, do not worry. We will 100% get round to your name. We're just doing the usual mid-season catch-up. Now, just before we dive into Michelle's experience, a quick shout out, thank you, and happy birthday to one of our Patreons, Mara Grossi. One of your friends has signed up on your behalf as a gift, which is wonderful and beautiful. So a happy birthday, Mara. I genuinely hope you have a wonderful day. But Mara and everyone, right now it's time. Lower the lights. Make yourself comfortable, and most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door. As we all listen to It Comes From the Ground. I've never put this all down on paper before, so I'll do my best to keep things moving in a straight line, but forgive me if there's some back and forth. I grew up in a haunted neighbourhood. There, that's the gist of it. Just a middle-class subdivision. A small town in the southern US. All the homes were built in the 1950s and 60s, part of an expanding mill village in the area. Each house was three bedrooms, single story, a quarter acre of yard. Nothing fancy, nothing gothic. The entire area, though, is just on the outskirts of Chickamauga, a national battlefield. A small suburb of Chattanooga, Tennessee. These places are steeped in history. A history of blood, of warfare. From the US war between the states, and before that, the annexing of the indigenous lands, where the Cherokee once made their homes. Now, I can't say that's why this one little neighborhood had issues. Only that the entire area has all the tropes of a horror film. I've never dug into the history of this particular street. I never felt the need to. It just was what it was. Now, this story will show my age. Some people out there will even say, oh, I have... Now, this story will show my age. Some of you out there will even say, oh, heaven, I remember those. But... we're old. Embrace it, I say. I was raised by my father. He was young, so we lived with my grandparents, his mother and father. I did have a sister 1 year younger than me. The family on my grandmother's side were a dirt floor cabin-raised Alapachan lot. They believed in the old stories. Ghosts, saints, and the banshee. They were all Scottish and Irish descent, very superstitious. My grandmother would tell me stories, passed down from her family from her great-grandfather, and she told me about the night he was riding home through the forest, and a fireball the size of a man dove out of the trees beside the road, landing on his horse behind him. It held on to him for a while whilst he screaming all the way home. It even made the local paper. In the article, he rode to the police station to report what happened, and the town sent out a few men, looking around, but obviously finding nothing. He was written off as being a drunk. In their defence, There are many articles of his follies whilst drunk. Even once causing a man's death by leaping from a train on to the gentleman. So there's that. Overall, I guess he was not a nice person. And if anyone is destined to be tormented by spirits, well, he'd be a likely candidate. When I finally got to meet my own mother, she told me about her brother. He was her elder brother, and he was constantly talking to and about his grandpa. That's fine. But the problem was, grandpa had died before he was born. From what I understand, until he was older, the family just assumed he had an imaginary friend. But it all came to a head one day. He was 16 and it was a big family cookout on the farm. And he began telling stories about grandpa. The family adults, all being a little drunk, started laughing and making fun of him. In a state of high stress, he stormed off. And a few minutes later, returned with a dirt-crusted mason jar. He yelled at his father that Grandpa said to give this to you, and he threw the jar on the ground. Apparently, Grandpa had told him where to find what today would be considered a time capsule. A handful of old treasures that his grandfather had buried in this mason jar, and then hidden it behind an old barn. There were a few faded pictures, coins, and assorted other items I don't remember. The pictures, though, they were of Grandpa and his parents. Shortly afterward, he was committed to a psychiatric ward for evaluation. But he was then released at 18. But he hung himself there, at the old family farm. My mother said when she did get to see him, there was nothing wrong or strange about him. It was just he could see people she couldn't. Big deal. This is a little of the background I come from. No wonder I'm writing a ghost story, right? But it gets better. I was raised strictly Southern Baptist, and at the same time, I remember sitting on the swing set at the drive-in theatre, watching the walls of the Amityville House bleed on the screen in front of me. Not the remake, the debut. I was 4. Perfectly acceptable parenting back then. Growing up, my dad and I went to every Halloween movie series premiere. It was our thing. Being an artist by trade, my dad even went so far as to make a chest-up cutout of good old Mike Myers and tape him to the outside of my bedroom window. Now, this was a high window, so he needed a ladder. And when the streetlights came on, there was someone looking in my window. Imagine my surprise when I yank back the curtain to find myself face to face with the Michael Myers. So yes, I guess I didn't have a chance but to end up weird. I have a wild imagination, I always have. I can create fiction, and I've had dreams where I've ended up in random bouts of sleep paralysis. In short, what I'm saying is I know very well the difference between fact and fiction. In the late 70s, as I mentioned, my sister and I, along with my dad, moved into my grandparents' home. I was around 3 and my sister Steph a year younger. But I don't remember anything strange happening until I was much older. At this point, Dad had remarried and we'd moved about a mile away to another neighbourhood. Being a young married couple, my sister and I would spend all summer and during the school year every afternoon at my grandparents' house. My grandfather was retired and my grandmother still worked down at the mill. My grandmother didn't drive, so every weekday my grandfather would drive her to work, a 20-minute round trip. Back then, kids played outside, and we had a network of friends up and down the street. And every family co-parented each other's kids. None of us were ever hungry, thirsty, bleeding, lost. Our little neighbourhood fed, watered, sheltered and bandaged boo-boos like a big extended family. Someone always had an eye on us. This also meant that all the houses of all my friends were all open to each other. No one would deny a kid the use of a bathroom, and hands must be washed before sandwiches. The core of my group consisted of myself, Steph, my sister, Kayla, who lived two houses down on the right, and Shelley, who lived next door on the left. The four of us were always together. This means there was a house between mine and Kayla's. I never knew the name of the lady that lived there. Just the old lady with the good driveway. The old lady next door wasn't married that I knew of. And as far as we were aware, she lived alone. She had lots of plants on her carport. And that carport was the smoothest, silkiest concrete we'd ever seen. Now, back then, we had those belt-on metal skates. Do you remember those? Horrible rattle-trap inventions. But that's what we had. Us girls found that her carport was the perfect place to skate. It was small, but it didn't matter. We loved it. Maybe my grandfather spoke with her about us going over, but I don't know. We just took it for granted that we could. Once, I got curious. So I started popping the fruits on her little Jerusalem cherry plants. That's the only time she ever scolded me. She explained the next time I was over that they were not toys, and they were not edible. Just pretty to look at, so no more squishing them. I think I cried. And after that, she would sometimes bring us out little snack bags of chips or cookies. Usually, though, she'd just pull back the curtain of her kitchen window and wave. We'd wave back and keep spinning on our skates. I'm probably six by now, maybe seven. And one night, my sister and I are in bed at my grandmother's. I don't remember hearing sirens, but maybe that's what woke me up. All I can see are red and blue lights flashing through the high window in our room. Me and my sister did what we could to climb up and peek, but we could only hold onto the window frame long enough to see headlights and the flashes from next door. This meant nothing to us. The next morning, Grandmother said nothing to us. And as kids will do, it was forgotten in the need of play. Summer moved on. Tree climbing, mud puddle wars, skating, and dancing our days away. Nothing much really changed. But I noticed the plants began disappearing from the old lady's carport. I didn't ask her. I'd just wave when she'd show up at the window. I think I thought it was too hot and she'd taken them in. My grandfather had ferns and sometimes he'd do that himself. Kayla, meanwhile, got an above-ground pool and our life changed forever. The metal skates were replaced with bathing suits. And moaning when it was time to leave, when Kayla either had to go for dinner or her mum, Anna, told us to leave. This is the first time we all noticed something was off. Steph was a thin girl, tiny, pale, and red-headed. Unless the pool water was hot tub warm, her lips would be blue, and she'd be in a full body shake. So Kayla, Steph and I are swimming one afternoon and Steph decides she's freezing. She says she's going to run home and get changed. So she runs off and 5 minutes later, I'm walking through the garage at our house and I'm headed up the two steps to the door. But before I can touch the doorknob, Steph has yanked it from the inside and launched herself at me. She is screaming, tears streaming, hysterical. I pull her further away from the door and closer to the driveway. There was no car, so Grandfather would have left to take Grandma to work. It's only a 20-minute round trip. Don't worry, he'll be home soon, I told her as I tried to calm her down. But then she starts telling me what happened. She said she'd gone to change in the house, grabbed her clothes, went to the bathroom, changed, hung up her bathing suit, and after coming out decided she wanted a drink. This would involve climbing onto the counter to get a glass from the cabinet. She's on her knees on the countertop, and she hears somebody walking heavily down the hallway. She turns her head and sees no one. She climbs off the counter and starts down the short hallway. My grandmother's room is the first on the right, directly opposite the bathroom, and it's the only room with the door closed. Steph thinks that maybe our grandmother fell, or she was doing something that made that noise. She hadn't noticed the missing car out front. So as she's reaching for the doorknob, the door swings open violently and hits the wall, and there's no one there. This is when she began screaming and running. As she's very slowly calming down and catching her breath, our grandfather pulls back into the driveway. He sees the situation and hugs Steph, and listens as she hiccups through the story one more time. His response was to laugh, and he said, "Oh, it'll just be the bear that lives in my room." He didn't even check for intruders. He didn't seem surprised at all. This didn't even occur to me at that age. The fact he was not shocked. The fact this in no way surprised him. Today's show is sponsored by Acorns. Now, I used to believe investment was only for people on Wall Street or people with finance degrees, people who used phrases like buy low, sell high, and other things I will never understand. But the one thing I do understand is the importance of letting your money and your future having a chance to grow. However, investments can seem daunting and most people don't know where to start. And for many people, including me, you believe you need a lot of money before you start investing. Plus, we all have busy lives and we don't have the time to go researching how you start investing. So we say, I'll do it tomorrow or next week or next month. But we all know tomorrow never comes. But Acorns make it so easy to start saving and investing for your future. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommend an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals and then automatically invest your money for you. I've recently turned 45 and investment has never been on my radar, but people like Acorns are so clear and straightforward, they've not only put it on my radar, but took it off my plate. So head over to acorns.com/darkparanormal or download the Acorns app today and start saving and investing for your future today. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investment involves risk. Acorn Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. For important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal. It was that very same summer that Kayla showed up at our house in tears. Her mum had left her in the house alone after breakfast. Anna's brother, Kayla's uncle, lived directly across the street. Anna had gone there to do laundry, as something was wrong with their washer-dryer. My sister, Shelley, and I were outside playing tennis in the road, and Kayla came flying out of her front door. She immediately bolted for us. When Kayla got to us, she was pale and in tears. It took her a while to compose herself, but finally she was calm enough to explain what had happened. Kayla was getting dressed, then she grabbed a snack and was about to head outside. And then she described hearing drumming, like a tapping down the hall. Her exact words were, "It sounded like the drummer man from an army." This isn't exactly scary, so she goes down the hall to her mum and dad's room, and the door's open, but no one's inside. She turns, heads back towards the front door, and as she's making the turn into the living room, she hears someone guzzling something behind the half wall that she's standing at. She doesn't look round the wall. She makes a break for the front door. But before she can get there, something or someone grabs her shoulder, yanking her off balance. But she manages to stay upright and screams, opening the door and running. When she reached us, we saw scratches. Two red lines roughly along her collarbone. And even the right strap on her baby blue spaghetti strap shirt was torn loose. This ghost is now forever dubbed the Gulp Gulp Ah Ghost. This was unacceptable to us. Our little mob grabbed weapons. A tennis racket, a piece of piping we found in a garage, a plastic baseball bat, and I can't remember what the fourth was. But we were going to whoop some ghost butt. We made it halfway across the living room and we heard a growl. A deep, guttural growl that reminded us all that we were all between 9 and 6. We shouldn't be here. So the four of us ran out of the house. Kayla's mum, Anna, heard four screaming girls and met us in the road out front. She placed us in the yard and went inside. I remember thinking she couldn't have made it to the kitchen as she was back with us so quickly. She didn't run us off. She just said, "Do not go in that house." Anna ran back across the street and inside. She called her husband, made him come home from work. We were still stood there as he drove up. He walked through the house by himself and came out a few minutes later. He said he found empty soda bottles behind the half wall. Anna told him when she walked in, she saw a bottle come rolling out from behind that wall. So the bottle didn't completely stop her. She just thought someone had got in and was hiding behind the wall. So she popped her head over, and there was no one there. Just bottles rolling around. Her husband hugged her and laughed, and said it was probably just us kids drinking sodas and not wanting to get into trouble. They must have just fallen over when she went inside. I know she kept trying to tell him something else that she heard, but she was saying it far too low for us to hear. Now, I might have been a kid, but I knew she was scared. In the July, the neighbourhood got a surprise because two new girls moved into the old lady's house. We'd stopped skating on her carport, and I hadn't seen the old woman in a while now. And suddenly we have new friends. Thoughts of a lonely old woman were completely forgotten. The older girl, I'll call her Jean, and her little sister, let's say Meg. They were great. Their parents immediately stepped up into the co-parenting with the rest of the neighbourhood. I remember once Jean told me her house was haunted. She said there was a lady there, but also her grandma, and her grandma followed them everywhere. Well, of course, this intrigued me, and I was constantly asking for stories. Jean was only too happy to oblige, telling me of walking in on her mum having conversations with someone that wasn't there. When she would ask, she'd tell her kids, "Oh, I'm just talking to mum." But Jean said these conversations were back and forth, like two people talking, not like a single monologue someone would do speaking out loud to a deceased loved one. I thought this was great. How cool to have a talking ghost. So when all of us kids were invited over to watch the premiere of Beatmaster, the original, on a widescreen colour TV on HBO, well, we jumped at it. So this one night, all us girls, all six of us, and Jean's mum are spread around the living room, eating popcorn, laughing, and then suddenly down the hall, there's a crash. Nothing crazy, just like something fell over or fell off a shelf. Ignorable, even. But then the laughing started. And it wasn't from anyone in our room. This was from down the hall. From either the bathroom or the bedrooms. Jean's mum stood up, stopped the movie, looked at all of us and said, "I'm sorry, girls, tonight's not a good night." And she shone us out, mid-movie. After that, Jean and Meg didn't come outside much anymore. They'd make excuses, or maybe their mum would. It was strange and it hurt a lot. We'd literally just gotten to know them. Around Christmas break, we noticed that their car was never in that driveway, and their lights were never on. Nothing moved. After Christmas, before going back to school, trucks showed up. And they started moving all of their stuff out of the house. Only once did I see the girls come with them that entire time. And Jean was allowed to come and sit with us for a while. And of course, we started asking the questions. Jean told us, that night, the night we left, something woke me and Meg up, shaking the bed. It was bouncing all over. So we ran into Mum and Dad's room and we lay down between them. But the next thing we know, someone screaming like they're being murdered, right next to our room. Mum sits up, Dad tries to too, but something grabbed his foot and almost ripped off his big toe. We all got out of bed and Mum's carrying Meg, Dad's limping. Mum's trying to get into our room so we can get some shoes and coats. But the door slams in her face. And you know that spare room where we kept all the extra stuff? Well, the little bike that was for Meg for Christmas came rolling out of the room and had done a few circles in the kitchen, then stopped and turned towards us like it was going to run us over. Dad grabbed me and we ran out of the garage door past it and we left that same night and stayed at my auntie's. When they left that day in the moving truck, we never saw them again. There were other small things in the area. Apparently, we as a family have a banshee. One that screamed and scratched my grandmother from the base of her skull all the way to her tailbone. That was the same night her sister died. That morning, she was terrified. And of course, heartbroken following the phone call. A few days later, she tried blaming the scratches on me. But I didn't sleep in that room that night. And I don't sleepwalk. I also don't have claws big enough to mark the skin through pyjamas. But I also understand people sometimes need a story to let them keep going on. And if that lie made her feel more comfortable, then so be it. Oh, and of course, there's the day Shelley's little sister went completely possessed. For a few hours, she would either follow us around the house and yard, chanting something that sounded like Yuyuma. I mean, that might not be specifically it, but what I do remember is a three-syllable chant and a completely colourless face. Eyes that weren't black, but looked like they were smoked over. Cloudy. This was a three-year-old. Now, if that was acting, it was better than any movie I've ever seen. She growled and chomped and shut her mouth, staring at a wall or into a corner completely motionless. It was beyond crazy. Yes, we should have called her mother sooner. And yes, we should have done something, but we were kids and, well, we were fascinated. She started choking, though, and then coughing, then screaming, and her mum ran in and picked her up, asking what we had done. We all pretty much gave blank stares and shrugs. I remember that baby girl turning and smiling at us as her mother carried her back down the hall. Nope. Then, of course, we have the house across the street, which had a pool table. A pool table that balls would move around on their own if you racked them up and just waited. And it had awesome hardwood floors, the only ones in the neighbourhood. and you'd hear hard-soled shoes clacking up and down the hall when we were just sitting in Carol's bedroom. I've spent many years in and around that neighbourhood. My grandfather eventually committed suicide in his bedroom with his bear. He'd received a cancer diagnosis and he could no longer mow his own yard. At his funeral, I finally learned something that as a child I never questioned, and no one would ever speak about it because I was a child. Across from my grandparents' house was an older couple that I loved dearly. Working for Mrs. Hansen was my first paid job, and at the funeral, me and Miss Hansen were catching up. She told me there weren't many of the original families left. She asked me if I remembered the old lady next door. I said I did, and I still felt bad about picking those Jerusalem cherries. And then she told me a story. Miss Duncan lived alone, you know. She did have a son, but he lived several states away. He somehow got hold of our number and called one day, saying his mum wasn't answering the phone, and asking if we could go and check on her. We told him we hadn't seen her in a while as well, though that wasn't completely unusual. So Mr. Hansen went over the next day and knocked on the door. No answer. He thought maybe I'll give it a day or two, so he checked the next day. You see, if she was sleeping, we didn't want to be a bother. That night, around midnight, our phone started ringing. Mr. Hansen got up, angry, of course, because of the time of night, and he ran to the phone. It was the elusive Miss Duncan. And all she said was, "Please, I need help. Please help me." And then hung up. We called the police and ran across the street. All the doors were locked, but the policemen and firemen were there in minutes, and they had to break down the door to get in. They found every door in the house was locked, and they had to break down each door. They finally found Miss Duncan. She died in her sleep, in her bed. But the thing is, she'd been dead almost 2 weeks, and there's no phone in her bedroom. Mrs. Hansen started asking me questions as if I could make something that happened 20 years ago make sense. Why did she lock all the doors? Why would you lock your own bathroom door? Why lock all the spare bedrooms? Who called us? I had only one question. I remember the lights. I remember the red and blue glow coming through the high window. If she died before that night, who were we waving at? In her garage door window? There's been a lifetime of little things, and it seems to congregate in that neighbourhood. We all grew up and went our separate ways, and I've no idea what trouble those girls have gotten themselves into since then. But I know what trouble I've found. I can still feel presences. I've learned how to listen, how to feel. Even now, my ghost dog teaches the tricks he knew to our new puppies. Protection is always in place because I know what's possible, especially given the path I've chose to take in life. I've changed the name of many friends and family slightly, but not my sister. This should be a fun read for her too, a walk down memory lane, so to speak. Thanks so much for giving me a place to share this. I found the show a few weeks ago and I've binged every episode since. Many thanks, Michelle. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for such an amazing experience for our second episode of Season 16. Now, many of you will have heard me before refer to something I like to call authenticators, or things which I think would not be made up. As in, you just wouldn't stretch that far, or you just wouldn't pick that particular strange quirk. And for me, Despite the literal plethora of experiences described in this episode, one thing jumps out, and that's the very brief mention of the possessed three-year-old girl. And it's this one thing. It's how you describe her eyes. For me, if somebody is inventing an event, and I know I can spot these things a mile off, they would just say her eyes were all black. They wouldn't describe them in the way you did, to say they weren't black, they were smoky. For me, it's that sort of intricate detail that somebody who's embellishing or making up a tale would not add in. They would stick to tropes, and believe me, I have a folder full of them. But that's a fascinating experience, and thank you so much for sharing it with us, Michelle. The question is it from the ground? If all of these houses in that neighbourhood are haunted in some way or another, is there a natural energetic power bank, if you will, that's providing energy so they can show themselves? Now, I did say at the start, this reminds me of a personal story, which I'm sure I've told before. But I will repeat it briefly because it's relevant to this idea. When my mother and father bought their first home, it was a newly built home, but it was built on the land of a former munitions site that was there during World War II. Now, because this was the place where we made bombs, etc., it took a direct strike during a blitz, and the place and all of its workers were basically annihilated. And several decades on, they built houses on this land. Now, my mother experienced, as funny as it may sound, a slap on the backside as she was bent over the sink washing her hair. At the time, my dad was downstairs watching TV, and my eldest brother was in a cot. So neither of those two were responsible. And then there was the lady whose house adjoined the back of my parents' house. Again, a similar build from the same time. Now, she would only do hoovering of a night. The reason being, if she attempted it whilst alone in the house of a day, the plug would always be pulled out. And secondly, she did not like the idea of being the only one awake in the house, so in sort of a cruel move really, she would hoover just before she went to bed in the hopes it would wake up the entire house and they could all fall asleep together, so she wasn't the last one awake. So similar to the stone tape theory, where if an emotional death or something major happened around walls containing iron, that can be replayed as a residual haunting, is there something deeper that seeps into the ground after tragedy has took place? And if so, is it stored within the ground and acts as some sort of power bank for lost souls? Maybe, maybe not. But I'd like you guys to also have a think on it and maybe come up with your own theories. Let me know. Send them in to contact@thedarkparanormal.com. And that's the same email address should you have your own personal paranormal experience that you'd like to share with the show. And remember, it's irrelevant of size. If it fits an episode for The Dark Paranormal, amazing. If not, we'll find a place for it either on Dark Bites or as a minisode. But right now, for episode 2 of season 16, I'd like to thank each and every one of you for choosing to spend your time with me right here on your show, The Dark Paranormal. And until next week, remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always try and leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here on The Dark Paranormal.